Steam Decks are out of stock in the U.S., and the Steam machine won't come out as soon as we had hoped. Are we starting to see the effects of the AI-induced RAM shortage? Tonight is February 15th, 2026, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk.
Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters.
I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it.
Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say?
And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Hey, everybody. It's been a bit. It's been 2 weeks. How are y'all been? How have you been? Have you been warming up a little bit? It's been getting a little warmer here. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a warmer, I guess, edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. For joining us live here on this Sunday night, thank you so much. We took a week off, so I'm glad that you still remembered we are still here. We do try to tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly. But this is a podcast, so I understand that you can't always be here. VogNetwork.com/Discord is where you can go to have a continuing conversation, talk about things, and even suggest things that we should talk about on the show, which I didn't use any of this week. But I like the conversation. The new company that owns Arcade 1UP has announced a Sonic arcade machine, and we've been talking about that, and maybe we'll get into that. I don't know. It's not planned, but who knows? I just brought it up. Esther to Matt even says it got up to 42 degrees Fahrenheit, felt like summer. You know, because this is when all the people up north that are used to, like, all the white stuff on the ground, they're like, ooh, shorts and t-shirt, let me get my, you know, lawn chair out, and, you know, it's balmy out here. In terms of what I watched last week, what I was doing last week, it was good. I enjoyed my concert viewing party. Apparently I could have had a lot of money had nobody actually like done the thing and scored, because I had in my squares, for the people that know what we're talking about, I had the 00 square at my day job, if just neither of them scored, I would have had a lot of money anyway. Yeah, so, and also, to those of you who do celebrate, you know, I hope you had the Hallmark holiday that was this weekend, that was yesterday. I hope you had a happy Valentine's Day if you are single. I hope that you had a good day nonetheless and that you took care of yourself. Do not value your self-worth on relationships. So, you know, I hope that it was a good day regardless and you weren't affected that much by the Hallmark holiday that was yesterday. So hopefully we all made it through it, and we all remembered and enjoy the discounted candy. Yesterday, when Matt does say that in our chat room. So now it's the time you can get the discounted chocolates, because the day is past. So first I did want to talk about that. I have not become a man of my word, because we have talked a lot, and one of my favorite developers that release, and publishers really, that release things, has been Digital Eclipse. And I've always, like, you know what, day one purchase, like recently the stuff that they've been doing, I'm like, it's a day one purchase, I'm all in for it. And they announced and stealth launched a new, it's not a Gold Master series, but it is in the kind of the same vein as like the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection, and I still don't have it. They released Rayman 30th Anniversary Edition, and I never played Rayman. I think Rayman, when it first burst on the scene, it was a game for the original PlayStation. It was a launch title for the original PlayStation. I did not get a PlayStation 1, basically until after Final Fantasy VII came out, because I saw Final Fantasy VII on somebody else's. At college at the time. Yes, I was in college at the time. I was not yet 29. And but I didn't revisit the early library of PlayStation. I basically, it was a Final Fantasy VII machine and an NCAA football 97, 98, whatever year they were on. That's, those are the two games that it played. That, that's what the PlayStation existed for, were those two games. And I never got into Rayman. And so Rayman, other than the only Rayman game I played was the one, I think, what was it on? What was it on the Wii or something? It was the one that actually had like the music levels where everything was timed to the music. And I'm pretty sure that was a Rayman game. But that was the only one that I had played. So I didn't have like this deep love for Rayman. And right now I don't have that much deep love for Ubisoft as a company, which is still the publisher, even though Atari and Digital Eclipse worked on this collection. So I did not get it. So I've gone back on my word of like, yep, Digital Eclipse released something, I buy it full price full first day. I didn't for this one. It is apparently well done. It's very interesting. I was looking up things about it to see if it was something I wanted to get, because there is a museum, interactive museum with like 45 minutes of video documentary, the stuff that Digital Eclipse really does well. But one of the things that they did was, and I saw in all these reviews and on all the videos, is the original PlayStation version of Rayman was stretching the full screen. And I'm like, I hate it when people had when like ROMs or people playing like the old like 4x3 games stretch it out to 16x9. It's very stretched. And I saw that with Rayman when they were playing the original PlayStation version. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? And I had read up about it, and it turns out I'm not gonna say geniuses at Digital Eclipse, but I don't, you know, that's a pretty strong word. They realized that the PlayStation version of the game was rendering more of the levels outside of the screen, and it was already putting them into video memory. It just, you were kind of, as the player on the 4x3 screen, it was only showing the stuff inside the 4x3. So what all Digital Eclipse did is they kind of stretched out, like they zoomed out just a little bit, and they were like, we were able to move the UI elements. And you actually get a true 16:9 mode. It's not stretched. You're actually seeing more of the screen in that 16:9 mode, even though they still offer the CRT scan lines and the curved CRT and all that stuff. So I thought that was actually kind of neat. And they're like, yeah, normally we default people to the 4x3. But this, like the 16:9, they call it super wide, was actually so good that's the default for the PlayStation game. Then all the other games have, you know, they're 4x3 native and stuff like that. But I thought that was kind of interesting when they found that the original PlayStation game was actually rendering outside the screen, and they're able to actually show you all of that. It's the difference between pan and scan and letterbox in the old movies. You know, now you actually get to see more things. So they also did add Bobby Blackwell's mode to all of them, because the Rayman games, they were very hard, which is probably also why I didn't get into them at the time. And so they do have like infinite lives, infinite hit points, infinite, you know, stuff. So you still have to do precision platforming, because you can still fall off the edge, but you can get like no game overs and things like that. So, that is a nice thing. But I don't have the love of Rayman, and I don't have the love of Ubisoft right now. As a company, based on their practices, that I don't feel right giving $20 right now, because I know Ubisoft is going to pocket most of it and Digital Eclipse will only get a little bit of it, and that's a shame for them. But maybe when it's on sale, or, you know, maybe if they're nice, I do have PlayStation Plus Extra, which has the Ubisoft Classics, and maybe one day Rayman 30th Anniversary will go into the Ubisoft Classics area, and then I just have it with my Extra subscription. So, ZenMonkey11 says, I had a bad cousin named Raymond, who everybody loved, but apparently ZenMonkey didn't. Raymond sound too much like his name, so I stayed away from it. Plus, I'm not a platformer guy. I left those games back in the 90s. I mean, to be fair, Rayman was 1995. So it was a very much a mid-90s platformer. Like, that's what it was. Immortal King actually asked, not Rabbids, Rayman Rabbids. No, I never really did play that one. I never did get into that one. So, yeah, the Rayman franchise doesn't mean that much to me, but remember, I'm also a little bit older. So, but for a lot of people, like Rayman, especially in France, I would guess, like especially in Europe, Rayman was kind of their Mario. You know, Mario still existed, but like for a lot of kids, like Rayman was their Mario, which is what Ubisoft was trying to go for. And he was one, you know, Sony was hoping that it would be a PlayStation mascot would be Rayman. Didn't happen that way. Also on that collection, apparently there is the Super Nintendo prototype, and they go into the story of it. And it's literally like a prototype of one level, and you can't do much. You can't beat it because there's no ending. It's just showing this, them, you know, going around in the level. And apparently that was a prototype because they thought that the Nintendo PlayStation was going to happen, or there was going to be a CD drive add-on for the Super Nintendo, and they wanted this game to be on CD-ROM, so they made a Super Nintendo prototype for it in anticipation of the Super Nintendo CD that CD drive that never existed. But essentially, like the Sega CD, what it kind of does, it does a little more than this under the hood. But essentially, what it does is it essentially takes the CD and it loads a Genesis game into memory. And then it can play like audio from the CD, but you're still playing a Genesis game. But then they would load in a new Genesis game all the time. So basically, you were writing a whole bunch of different like things that would be on a Genesis cartridge, but they would be just loaded off the CD when needed. And that's why you could have a lot bigger, more expansive things going on, because you didn't need to put the whole game on the cartridge. You just needed to put that level or that scene on the cartridge, and then you would load the next one in. And they were probably thinking that the Super Nintendo CD would work kind of the same way. And so that's why they made a prototype on a cartridge that was one level and didn't do all that much, because they assumed every level would just be the size of a cartridge. As Sharon and Matt says, they kind of threw a lot of character games early PS1. Crash Bandicoot commercials were where they were trolling Nintendo. Yeah, Crash Bandicoot, I think, was more here. That's because he was kind of more, he was more extreme. Because remember, in the 90s, we were all about extreme. That was kind of the thing, especially in the late 90s. And Crash Bandicoot was seen as more of an extreme, teen angst. Like, it was, you know, more frenzy, frantic, whatever. And Rayman was basically just, you know, a cutesy character, like Mario at the time, with no arms and just hands. Questbush says, I never got into the Rayman series, but I'm happy this collection is out for those who do love it. And I'm the same way. Like, I want to check it out. I want to watch the 45-minute documentary, basically, that's in there. I want to go through the history, because even though it wasn't a big part of my life, it was a big part of Ubisoft's story, and it was a big part of the video game story, especially in Europe. And so I want, you know, I wasn't a fan of Jeff Minter's as much either, but I bought that Goldmaster series and got to get a little more insight on the things that Jeff Minter did. And I think that I would do that with Rayman. I would have a greater appreciation for Rayman, but not for $20 right now. But it'll go on sale at some point on something, and I will pick it up then. That was the big thing from the Sony State of Play. A lot of this, like, humor is gone in the gaming industry, and it's kind of sad. I was watching the Sony State of Play, and it's all like, I'm sure that the games are, and I'm going to use the term fun in the sense of enjoyable, something, game mechanics that you enjoy playing, and I'm sure there's a lot of that, but there's not a lot of smiles going on in at least in the Sony State of Play. There were some that could have, but it was, you know, it was still more brooding. And, you know, Dark Tetsuya says, color me curious on the new Castlevania, at least. I mean, it's really good that Konami is finally entering into their phase of where they're going to make a Metroidvania game that everybody else has done. And, you know, it's about time that Konami finally joins the Metroidvania craze. Don't know what took them so long. But a lot of the other stuff, it's dark, it's brooding, and stuff like that. It's all attitude. And I don't know if we're going to get back to the fun games. When I use fun in this sense, I mean more like, you know, colorful, happy, you're smiling and stuff like that. Like, yeah, you may enjoy playing a Resident Evil, but you're not smiling while you're playing Resident Evil. You are still enjoying it. And there is something to be said about enjoying something that doesn't necessarily make you smile. There's plenty of enjoyable movies that aren't happy, and that's fine. But there are still comedies out there too. And I feel like there are comedy movies, but there's not that many comedic games, or at least that's not the one they're pushing. And maybe it's because those comedic games don't make that much money. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Remember, MBAs and tech bros are in charge of the industry, not creatives. And they're minimizing risk. And maybe cutesy games are a risk because they're a financial risk now, right now. And that's maybe what they're going off of. That's what the spreadsheet says. And we make games for spreadsheets. We don't make games for people anymore. ZenMonkey11 says, I zoned out of the state of play. The games I saw look the same. It's very hard for me to watch these things now. I miss the fun stuff, too. And Orange Wright says, it does seem like they saved the cutesy games for the Nintendo Directs. And I'm like, and I get that. But I would love to also have a cutesy game that uses the power of the PlayStation 5. Or a happy game that uses the power of the PlayStation 5. You know, Little Big Planet. Stuff like that. You know, we don't have any more Little Big Planets. We don't have, like, that entire studio shut down now. And, yeah. And even, like, the games that have the cartoony style, like Konami's entry into the Metroidvania genre, which, you know, like I said, I don't know why they haven't done this sooner, but, you know, welcome to the party, pal. But even that, it's like it's dark and brooding, even though it's animated and it's got colors and stuff. It's still, you know, extreme. It's still brooding. And I use extreme in the 90s way that we said extreme. Orange writes like Astro Bot 2. Like, yes, Astro Bot did gangbusters. You would think we would have more things that, you know, kind of got on the Astro Bot chain and from third party. Because I know the Sony State of Play was all from third party developers. But come on. Like, you realize how much money is in it if you can make a, you know, a good cutesy game? And Dark Decia says, especially he's back on the whole Konami entering the Metroidvania scene, giving it to the Dead Cells folks after doing some other DLC for Castlevania should have happened a lot sooner. But isn't it weird that Konami's like concentrating on video games again? For the longest time, they were like, you know, we make slot machines and pachinko machines now. And it's a lot that's big business. The gaming industry in that sense is big business for them. And it's kind of weird to see them coming back into like video games and actually like looking at their old properties and doing that. Fifth Dream says the last cute-ish thing I can think of was Stray, and it was still a gritty cat game. It also was very sad at the end. Spoiler alert. And Questbrush says Konami extending their redemption arc. I mean, hang on. Let's, you know, it'd be nice. I will report that like next week it's going to be probably a packed show. Next week here, I will say that Loki, formerly of Orange Launch Radio, is going to be very, very disappointed in me because tomorrow I got the package. It's coming by UPS, or I don't have the package yet, or I'd have it right here. But tomorrow I do finally get my $100 piece of plastic. That is the Virtual Boy enclosure for the Switch, so I can play the Virtual Boy games. I have not been able to procure a working Virtual Boy, and I know that they're out there because that's usually the thing. I'm like, well, just get a real one. I'm like, I've tried for years. I can't get one that works. I can get broken ones. And they're like, oh, but you can, like, you know, maybe take it apart and solder it and physic yourself. And I don't know if you know this about me. I'm lazy. And so the minute you're like, oh, you could just buy a broken one and, you know, solder some things and order some chips and, you know, put some elbow grease into it. No. So I'm going to, you know, get the $100 piece of plastic and, you know, put my Switch 2 in it this week and play some Virtual Boy games here. And you know, Loki's like, why? He's very disappointed. He actually even told me last week how disappointed he was in me. I did get to talk with him. And Fifth Dream says, soldering is a thing I've learned that is not a thing I can learn. I actually have soldered before. I haven't recently. I have soldering kit now because you kind of need one if you have pinball machines. But thankfully, I haven't had to use it yet. But I want to get like one of those. Like, I need to like relearn because like I learned at one point and even did some like soldering, like some electrical stuff. But I need to get like one of those like learn kits that you can like learn how to do things and kind of do some of that stuff. So, thankfully I haven't needed to yet, but I might at some point. Also, sometime this week, I might get my Commodore 64 Ultimate. Hopefully it won't be this weekend because I am going to be at a rescheduled board game convention this weekend here in Atlanta. Dice and Diversions is taking place this weekend, northwest of Atlanta. It's a tabletop board gaming convention. It is by the same people that do the Southern Fried Gaming Expo, which is a conference we've sponsored for a long time, which is the Arcade and Pinball Expo here. The Southern Fried Gaming Expo is a pastiche, I guess I'm going to say, of California Extreme. They wanted to take a version of California Extreme and bring it over here to the Southeast. Dice and Diversions is taking Gen Con. It's the pastiche of Gen Con, bringing Gen Con and bringing it to the Southeast. So I'm going to be doing that this weekend. And knowing my luck, that's when my Commodore 64 will arrive, and it's going to sit out in the front porch while I'm out of town. So, yeah, so I'll be playing board games. I'll have the Virtual Boy. I'll have maybe my Commodore 64. I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting week next week, show next weekend, because I will still be here because, like, it's local and it's going to end early enough on Sunday. I'll be here. But let's talk about the news that happened in the past couple weeks. And this was not mentioned on our Discord at all. But I saw stuff about it and started digging deeper, and I'm like, okay, now I'm worried, because I thought that, you know, this was going to be my next ecosystem. I was going to go all in on this, and now I'm not sure when that's going to happen. I thought it was going to be sometime in the beginning of 2026, and who knows, that may not happen. So we're talking about Valve, we're talking about Steam, and we're talking about hardware. IGN reports that all three models of the Steam Deck are out of stock and have been out of stock for at least 24 hours, according to a post from Wario64. I just checked an hour ago, and they are still out of stock here in the U.S., all three models. With prices for gaming PCs and components skyrocketing, it's possible that this could mean a longer-term shortage. It's no secret that PC hardware is in a weird place right now. With memory prices going through the roof, it was only a matter of time before handheld gaming PCs started getting hit by the shortages and increased prices, and that it makes it odd timing for all three models of the Steam Deck to go out of stock in the U.S. So it is still available in some places like the U.K. and the EU. Tom's Hardware spotted that the shortages are also in Taiwan, Japan, Hong Kong, and Korea. Not in the UK or EU. So I think it's more hardware based, and it's not really tariff based. Tariffs may have a part of it here, but like that wouldn't affect Asia. So there's other things that are affecting it in the Asia market. With the handheld still being available in Europe, it's likely this is just a short-term regional shortage. After all, anyone that wants to get into PC gaming right now probably finds the low price of the Steam Deck attractive, given the skyrocketing costs on pretty much every other piece of hardware. And it's not too much of a stretch to imagine that demand for Valve's handheld is higher than normal. So this is, and I know that there's people in chat are like blaming the tariffs immediately. And I'm not going to blame the tariffs immediately. I do like blaming tariffs on things. But the bigger issue here is the price of components. And let me tell you what's going on. And my take on this is there is a shortage of RAM. And what happens when supply goes down and demand goes up is that the value goes up. And what is the value? In financial terms, a value of something is an agreement between what a seller is willing to pay for it and what a buyer is willing to pay for it. Or what a seller is willing to sell it to you for and what a buyer is willing to pay for it. That is what determines the value. And as there is less stock, buyers are more willing to pay more money to the sellers, and the sellers are more willing to charge more money, and that determines the value. And what has happened recently, and I think it only started a couple months ago, is that a bunch of AI companies, including OpenAI, made orders for entire wafers of RAM. And so these are not manila wafers that come in the box and aren't very tasty. These are like wafers, and like there will be like maybe 100, I don't know how many, but like a good number of RAM chips on it, and then they cut off the RAM chips and put them individually. And these AI data centers have just pre-ordered entire wafers, therefore dwindling the supply. And some of them even said, the reason we're doing this is because we don't want our competitors getting this RAM, so we are buying all of the stock, even though the RAM chips haven't been made yet. We are buying the stock before it's even made. Therefore, the supply has gone down and it's harder for their competitors, which they see both as other AI centers, but also you, the consumer, won't be able to get RAM. And the reason they're doing this is because they are planning on building AI data centers, massive data farms, AI farms, to be able to put all of their processing there so they can sell it to other businesses and other consumers. But they need to make sure that their competitors in the AI space can't do it themselves. And they also need to make sure that you can't get the stuff, so you instead buy their package. I'll get to that in a second. They are trying to do this for the AI data centers that doesn't exist, but they also don't have the money to build these AI data centers yet. They are trying to get investors for that. And, investors are kind of getting wise to this just a little bit. Like, we are now getting to the, you know, hopefully getting to the downward cycle of like a crash. And so I've seen this with the dot-coms. Dot-coms didn't go away, but there was a time that everybody was investing in dot-coms and then they went down and all the dot-coms that were over-promising and overextending went away. And then there were other dot-coms that did survive, like your Amazons and stuff like that. So we're kind of at that point. And even though at one point the Dow was over 50,000, a lot of companies have now, or a lot of investors have now kind of cooled on the AI, and it's starting a panic as well. But these RAM wafers that of the RAM that has not been built yet, they have just pre-purchased the production line and said you can't build anybody else's RAM. For AI data centers that haven't been built yet, for consumer, for a service that hasn't been funded yet, that is what is causing the RAM shortage. And we are now getting to the point where the Steam Decks that were manufactured before the RAM shortage, they've run out. And in order to get the same RAM that they have been using in those Steam Decks for years, it is now much more expensive. And the problem for that is it may now cost more to manufacture the Steam Deck than they get from the consumer. And so they would lose money on the Steam Deck. And unlike and Steam, in a lot of companies nowadays, they don't sell the console at a loss anymore. That is now probably what's happening is like, oh, they could still get the exact same component, but instead of being cheaper, it is now more expensive. And so they either have to figure out what new RAM that is comparable to put in the new Steam Decks, or they need to raise the price of the Steam Deck for the consumer. Valve is, as we talked about last week, Valve is kind of the easy target, the lowest person on the totem pole in terms of financial stuff. Because we talked last week about there's a class action lawsuit over Valve taking 30% of all sales on Steam. And everybody's like, but Nintendo takes 30%, Sony, Microsoft, Apple, Google, they all take 30%, Epic Games takes 12%, or sometimes 0%. But why don't they go after the others? And it's because of all of them, Valve is the easiest one. They have the least, they have the shallowest pockets. And so that's also why this hits Valve earlier than it hits Sony and Nintendo and Microsoft, because Valve has the shallowest pockets of all of them. They make a lot of money. They've got a lot of money, but in compared to Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, they don't make that much. So PodCulture says, just for kicks, I priced the 64 gig kit I got at the start of the pandemic. It is far more than what I spent on the entire PC build now. So the hope is that we can hope for is that these AI data centers don't go into fruition. So now all those wafers, they just now go to consumers and then the market's flooded and that lowers the price. But what the suits in charge hope happen of the AI companies, not necessarily Valve, is that it's going to be so cost prohibitive for you as a consumer to own a computer that has a GPU and has memory that instead you'll take the cheaper option of buying their streaming service where they do all of your processing because RAM is now so expensive, you're going to just have to pay them. That's better for you. And in the long run, you as the consumer save money, but it's a degraded experience, but you're saving money. And that is kind of what they are hoping for. That's what even like the game streaming companies are like, you know, maybe someday, you know, maybe if we buy all the GPUs, it's going to be so expensive for consumers to buy GPUs. They'll just pay us to use the GPUs we bought that they couldn't get. And that'll make us a lot of money. Questmaster says two of China's largest memory makers are expanding their capacity, and some are hoping they could fill the gap if they can do it. We'll have to see. And we'll have to see who buys those. Because remember, I think it's the Crucial memory brand actually just discontinued their consumer line because they were making so much money off the AI companies. They're like, consumers aren't going to need RAM anymore. And that's like, I used to buy Crucial. Like, that was the memory, that was the brand that my dad liked when he was still building computers in the early 2000s. You know, they decided, you know what, consumers don't need RAM anymore. That's what's going on with the Steam Decks. Now, how does that move on to other things? Now, so remember last month or last year, like late last year, November, they announced that they were expanding their Steam ecosystem. And I was very excited for this. They were going to have the Steam controller, the Steam frame, and the Steam machine, the bringing back of the Steam machine. IGN reports that when the Steam Machine was first announced back in November 2025, remember, so long ago, it was so long ago, Valve said that the console-like PC would be launching in the first quarter of 2026, which would mean by March 31st. We're literally halfway through the first quarter of 2026. But now they're more complicated. Valve just released a blog post where it says that, quote, we planned on being able to share specific pricing and launch dates by now, unquote. But the AI shortages that are causing PC hardware to spike in price has caused the company to take a bit more time to nail down the price and release date for the Steam Machine and Steam Frame. Valve does still claim that it intends to launch the Steam Machine in the first half of the year. So instead of the first quarter, now it's the first half, which follows an AMD earnings call that also suggests that an early 2026 launch date. But I'm going to guess what they will probably do to hit that is that it will be very limited availability. Will you be able to get a Steam Machine in the first half of 2026? Most likely not. Because they're not going to be able to manufacture. It's not going to be like the Switch 2, where they basically flooded the market and anybody who wanted a Switch 2 could get one. Valve does not have the deep pockets of Nintendo to be able to do that. And suddenly, they had a spec all in November. They had a spec all set out. They had mentioned, I think by the end of January, they were going to say, this is what's in the Steam Machine. This is how much it's going to cost. This is when it's going to come out. And now that spec that they had in November, pretty much locked in, is now way more expensive than it was. And now they've got to scramble, like with the Steam Decks. What do they replace the RAM with that's in there because they can't afford that RAM anymore? Or do they raise the price? Do they say, you know what? Yeah, we had wanted this to be a $700 system, but now it's a $1,000 system. And a lot less people are going to buy it. And this is also apparently going to affect the Steam frame as well. They don't say the Steam controller. So we may still get the Steam controller, but we haven't heard anything about it yet. But S. Sharon Matt says, you'll enter a lottery on Steam and only a handful of folks and influencers will get one. And God, those lotteries. I remember when there was the big GPU shortage, right? The big GPU shortage of 2020 and 2021 because of Bitcoin and crypto mining. Entering a daily lottery on Newegg for the chance to purchase a GPU, and I finally, like, after like a month of entering literally every day, got the opportunity to buy like a 3060 Ti or something so I could complete my new build. I've got a 3080 Ti now, and then I'm like, okay, I really should get like a 4000 series, but those jacked up in price too, because guess what's good for AI? All the stuff that was good for crypto, they can use GPU. Now they can use GPUs now and reprogram them to work their large language models. So there's now a GPU shortage again, and it's a different set of tools. It's not for crypto anymore. It's now for AI, LLMs and stuff. So, yeah, maybe it'll be that in influencers. And unfortunately, I'm not a big enough influencer to get one as much as I would like to. And, yeah, so the problem is our wages aren't going up to pay for this stuff. That's the thing that that you know you should remember is that yes, everything is more expensive, and that's normally what happens. But in the past, you know, before Reagan, wages would go up in accordance to inflation, and then we stopped doing that in the 80s. So yeah, so let's talk about the one last thing going on here, and this is. I love this. I want to love this industry. I want to love the gaming industry. I thankfully don't work in the gaming industry. I work in the tech industry, greater tech industry. But I want to love the gaming industry, but the suits in charge are making it very hard. And Video Games Chronicle reports that Riot Games has announced that it's downsizing the development team behind its League of Legends fighting game 2XKO. Just weeks after it left early access and launched for consoles. In a statement, the developer said that following its full launch on January 21st, the free-to-play title, quote, hasn't reached the level needed to support a team of this size long-term, unquote. Executive producer Tom Cannon claimed that the affected employees will be supported either with roles on different teams or a minimum of 6 months of notice pay and severance. The scale of layoffs is not clear, but former producer Patrick Miller claimed on Blue Sky that he'd been laid off within 30 minutes notice after working on 2KX or 2XKO in some form for about a decade. He wrote in Riot's statement, quote, I want to take the moment to share an important update on 2XKO. This is a difficult update to share, but I want to be clear what's changing and why. After a lot of discussion and reflection, we're reducing the size of the 2XKO team. I want you to know that decision wasn't made lightly. As we expanded from PC to console, we saw consistent trends in how players were engaging with 2XKO. The game has resonated with a passionate core audience, but overall momentum hasn't reached the level needed to support a team of this size long term. With a smaller, focused team, we're going to dig in and make key improvements to the game, including some of the things we've already heard you asking for. We'll share some of our plans too, unquote. So here's my question. What was your plan? Because this is the problem that we're running into with the model of live service games, where it has changed the fundamentals of how a game development studio works. Because if you look at construction of like buildings, like let's get out of the tech industry. Construction of a building. You need hundreds of people to build a skyscraper. Once the skyscraper's built, you only need a smaller crew. You do not need hundreds of people to maintain that skyscraper. You need a fraction of the people. So what was your plan to keep the whole team? Once you built the skyscraper, what was the plan? Because in the old days, what you would do is that you would have the next game already being working on. You would be in pre-production of the next game while the current game was in production. So the concept artists would move from the game from game one and start working on game two while game one was in active development. And then as game one was in testing, the developers of game one would start working developing game two. And basically you would just continually have things like that. But now that we have live service games, the idea is, well, we have one game and it's going to print money. So what was your plan? You have nowhere else for the concept artist to go, because once the game's out, you're in maintenance mode. Like, even in the tech industry, to build a piece of software, even the stuff that I do, requires a team of a whole bunch of engineers. To maintain that piece of software once it's released, much smaller team. You don't need as many people. And so theoretically, they now move and work on the next thing. And that's how it should be done in games. But unfortunately, with live service, it's no. We make one game and then we support it. Of course you're not going to need your full team once it's out. Of course you're not. So you can sit there, oh, after careful consideration. Yeah, when was that careful consideration? What? Maybe the careful consideration was years ago. And you knew this was going to happen, because what else was your planning? And this is great for the investors. Okay? It's great for the, and because the revenue, the consumers will still pay for all their items and stuff, because I believe 2XKO is a free to play, but they make money on cosmetics and stuff. But you know, this is great, and then they're paying less salaries, so the revenue they get is higher. The number go up. It's a green number. That's great. That's exactly how a business should work. It sucks for the people in it. And Dark Sakura says, kind of like what another company does. They release new characters, new maps, revamping the old content. So they always have concept artists and dev teams. And I believe that's Dead by Daylight is the dev company that she's referencing there. And that's great, but you still need less people for that than you did when you were building out the entire gameplay engine. And Behavior Interactive is who she's talking about. And, you know, you probably don't need as many people that are trying to do, you know, all the logic behind, you know, disabling the generators. And, you know, a lot of that stuff, like a lot of the core mechanics, your core team doesn't need to be there anymore. Now, in the sense of Dead by Daylight, I know that like each killer and survivor has their own game mechanics. So there are still dev teams, but you still don't need as many devs as you did when they were trying to work out generators and escaping and all the core main, you know, the core game loop. They're not working on the core game loop anymore. And so they need less people. So what, and maybe Behavior Interactive does have something else that they're working on. Or they've, you know, people have been leaving the company silently. It wasn't a layoff, but then they just didn't replace that person because they didn't need to. That's my question to Riot, is what was your plan originally to keep the dev teams working? Like, because I don't think there was one. I think they knew once this game comes out, we go into, you know, we can have a smaller team that just does really targeted fixes and little maintenance and stuff, because the core game loop's done. They don't need to work on the core game anymore. Now that's just little flourishes, and you don't need as much. You don't need as many people to build a new room for your house than you did to build your, have your house built in the first place. And that's just reality. That's my question, is what was your plan? And we're never going to know. Because they're going to say after careful consideration, and you know, this was not a decision we made lightly. But I want to know when you made that decision. Because it might have been years ago that you made that decision. And now that you're out of early access, now that you've released everywhere, like everything's been built. The house has now been built. What was your plan to keep all the people that built the house around? And you might not have had one, or you may have decided, you know what, we're just gonna do that, and we're gonna say all the right things. Oh, we're gonna, you know, and give severance and all that stuff. But I don't think there was a plan to keep the entire build team that built your house together when all you wanted was the game, and it was going to go into maintenance mode. In the sense of, they're still making new characters, they're still doing bug tweaks and stuff, but you don't need as many people. Questbuff says, one of the complaints I heard about 2XKO is how abhorrent the cosmetic pricing was compared to competitors, which players weren't too happy about. Are they selling monocles? Old school people who know EVE Online know what I'm talking about there. SJR Matt says, yeah, they'll talk about roadmaps and targets and needing to restructure, hiding behind HR speak. In reality, they planned this and wanted to treat their staffs as temps all along. And one of the things that I was told early on is because I was asking somebody at a job, two jobs ago, I was asking our CFO about this stuff. And he's very practical in the sense of he's very cold hearted. He looks at the numbers. And I was asking because of Activision. This was the year Activision Blizzard, before the merger, laid off so many people after having their best year ever, their best financial year ever. And then they laid everybody off, like, the very next year. And I'm like, why would they do that? And he's like, well, it makes a lot of sense from a financial standpoint. And what he explained to me is that in terms of headcount and hiring and letting go and, all that stuff, you have to take into account how much money you're going to make in the future. And that, yes, Activision made the most money they've ever made the previous year, and the people that worked there were paid last year out of that money. And it's the job of the CFO, according to him, that the CFO, he or she or they need to look into the future and predict how much money are they going to make this year and tailor their headcount to that. And they could probably look at, you know, okay, well, last year we released this big thing that was huge, but we don't have a big thing releasing this year that will give us that. So we need to downsize to more accurately meet what we're going to get and what we're going to make this year. And yeah, the people that were there that made Activision the most money the previous year, they were paid last year, that previous year. That was last year. This is this year. And that's kind of the way it was explained to me, is that that's why they do this, is because, you know, it's just because something was successful in the past, you were already paid for that. Like, you as a person, and if nothing's coming out this year, or they don't expect that they're going to make that this year, they can't pay you this year. And that's the mindset that the people with the numbers and the people with the spreadsheets that have the green numbers and the red numbers and stuff, that's all they care about. And they're like, we have to take emotion out of it. We have to take, you know, all that stuff out of it. It's we've got to make money. And especially if you're a publicly traded company, which Activision Blizzard was at the time, you need incremental growth. And you can either have incremental growth by selling a lot more, or you can have incremental growth by reducing your expenditures, which includes payroll. And you can still get that growth. Questmaster says, Larian isn't perfect, but one of the ways they managed to keep their headcount was to both support Baldur's Gate 3 and expand it with free content by patches, and immediately get them working on products like Divinity that was announced, showcased to the VGAs. And that is how it used to be. Like, Larian's doing it the way that they used to do things like this, where it was, they were, companies would, like, end working on one game and immediately start working on the other one. And if you've ever played, like, those game dev sim, game developer sim games that I think, like, one company made one, like, 15 years ago or something on mobile, and, like, everybody, there's a bunch of copycats out now. But that's what you would do, is that you would start working on multiple things. That way you were able to continually rake in the money. But that was also before live service, because you got your money when the game came out, and then you got nothing else. And that's how they used to work. That's how things used to work in the 8-bit and the 16 and even the 32-bit era before downloadable content. Now, once we have downloadable content and, you know, like not just, you know, patches and stuff, but also, you know, expansions and things like that, once the game was done, it was done. And you either had to start building something else, or you closed up shop. And if everybody decided to continue, like, making new things. And now we don't need to make new things anymore, because either it's a live service game, so it never ends, or it's a game that has a whole bunch of expansions and DLC. You know, I look at, and I'm going to pronounce it wrong, and somebody's going to be upset at me, Ryugo Gotaku, which makes the Like a Dragon series. They basically do this. They basically make new games in the Like a Dragon series, and they come out once a year. This time around, it's Yakuza Kiwami 3 and Dark Ties, which some people aren't happy about. I haven't played the original 3, Yakuza 3 Remastered. I have it still. It's been delisted, so you can only get this one now. But, you know, they did that. Last year, it was Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, which is, if you still have Game Pass, which you might not, it's now on Game Pass. And there's going to be a new Like a Dragon game next year. And that's how they keep their team going. And because Like a Dragon's not a live service game. It sucks for the people at Riot. This is not the first time Riot has let go of a bunch of people that just worked on a game that was released. But I don't think there is any way that 2KXO could have met any expectations to keep that full team together. It could have become the brand new best fighter in the world, usurping everything else at EVO, everything else that anybody's playing, and they would still lay off people, because you still don't need your full team to make patches and bug fixes and new characters. You just don't. Normally I would take a music break, but I didn't. And I'm sorry about that. So, you know, we won't be doing a music break this week. Also, we will not be taking calls, because it is, I did talk a little bit too long tonight. So, Coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio 2DX. It is three people talking about much more than just games, but also things in pop culture, and we like to check in with them to see what is going on in their life and how last week went. I want to check in with them. So OLR, are you there yet?
Hi
there. How's it going? Did you miss me last week?
With everything I threw, but my aim will get better when I get closer.
All right. Well, hopefully that'll work out. So let me ask you this, because I just went on a whole rant about, you know, game dev teams and what was the plan. What's your take on, you know, how the live service games are kind of, I think, like, you know, hurting the industry in the sense of now we got to let go all these talented people because we don't have work for them anymore?
I think it's absolutely every point that you made about it. I think that it's a rare company that finds a way to utilize its workforce effectively. The old way, I mean, I don't want to be that person, but the old way was better. It did it the right way. It used staff effectively. It guaranteed jobs. And I mean, at this point, you may as well just outsource to a vendor if you're going to keep doing it this way, you know, and let the vendor companies out there worry about their staffing or make themselves available for other games instead of a dedicated team. Of course, you would sacrifice quality for something like that, but at least it would keep people employed.
Well,
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, well, so you also think about like I'm going to use another game. I'm going to use Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Which you will hear the Jeff Keighleys of the world say, oh, it was a small team of 30 people that made this game. And then you look in the credits, and there's actually 400 names in the credits because they used a lot of those outsourced firms. There are a lot of companies out there that all they do is they do parts of game development for other companies. And that's why the 30 people at Sandfall Interactive still have jobs after this came out, because now they're down to that skeleton crew. But they still played for 400 people worked on the game all together. So, you know, maybe that's that's one of the ways that it works nowadays, but also Clair Obscur, once it was done, it's basically done.
It's not like a Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. And even then, Baldur's Gate 3, they moved on to Divinity. And so they started working on the next thing as well. So, and Hello Games with No Man's Sky, they've been updating No Man's Sky, but they've also been working on this other game at the same time. And so that's how they're keeping everybody busy.
Going back to my example earlier about behavior.
Yeah.
I can tell you that when Dead by Daylight started out, it was basically, oh, there's this multiplayer mode in Naughty Bear. Let's turn it into a full game. And they didn't have a very big team to work on it, obviously. But they did have a pretty large team as they started expanding more and more. They had some layoffs, I want to say, around 2024, and mostly it was in their social teams. But I think that they're a little bit different because any other company that's tried to do another game along the lines of what they're doing has pretty much failed. And so I think that though there is something to learn because they do maintain a larger staff, to my knowledge, than some of these other ones because of how they output their content. And I think that if these companies who have these live service games, if they want some longevity for it, they need to have more staff and bring out regular content to keep people interested in their franchise. That just seems logical to me, but I don't think that that's exactly how they want to do it. The product's out. They play it till it's dead. They make a new product.
Yeah. So I don't know what the solution is. If I did, I would make it happen. But I'm just a person with a mic. So, it's a shame because I really want to love this industry. I want to keep talking about the good things in this industry. But this it kind of hurts.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, we've definitely have been there.
S. Jeremy Matt brings up a real quick question. I did not bring this up in mind, but, you know, because we're both pinball people. Your thoughts on Pokemon Pinball that was released. Stern, to give background, Stern Pinball does two releases a year. They usually announce one in the winter, one in the summer. The winter release is Pokemon. It is a simple, what they call, I think, a two-fan or a fan table, I think is the technical term for the play field. So it's a little more of a quote-unquote simplistic layout, but it does have a Meowth Bash toy that's even in the pro version, which is the art one that you'll see in your arcades. And they just announced it this past week. What are your thoughts on the Pokemon pinball table that we're about to see in about a month or so?
Two words. Yeah. She basic.
Mm-hmm. So was the recent Star Wars one.
True. I think I don't have the same level of nostalgia for Pokemon that a lot of people do. And they are definitely playing to the nostalgia factor because it's mostly Kanto region Pokemon with nods to some of the others.
Yeah.
I did watch their little Stern, you know, party preview thing that they had. And of course, my hubby Dan, he said that basically all of his pinball buddies are losing their mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's turned into kind of a drama fest. But at that, I mean, I think it looks nice. It's something I would play. My first impression was, oh my God, I need a Pokemon pinball table. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was like, no, I don't think I need this. Anyone have a Sword of Fury handy?
Yeah.
You know?
So,
It's cute.
Yeah, it's cute. It's got, I think they said, like, what, 180 Pokemon? So it's not just the original 151. But yeah, I think it's... So, A, it made me... I was nostalgic more for Pokemon Pinball on the Game Boy, in the Game Boy Advance, because those were great. And maybe, hopefully, we'll get those at some point in like, Nintendo Switch Online or something. But I think...
It's pretty sharp, though.
Yeah. But what I think is this will help with is... giving another angle for younger people to get younger kids and younger people to get into pinball, which is, you know, what they've tried to do with like Mandalorian and some of the Star Wars stuff and as well. But and that's why it's I think it's kind of good. It's a more basic layout because it will, you know, be good for people to get into pinball and kind of learn, because one of the things that I've kind of learned from my pinball experience getting back into it is that a lot of the people that are even older than me, and of course I'm only 29 plus, but older than me, they were raised on the simpler machines, and then they got gradually over time were introduced to more complex things and concepts. So now when they play a table, they know, okay, there's like seven modes and I needed blah blah blah. But if you don't know that, it's overwhelming. Because people didn't start on a basic layout, and maybe if the Pokemon table and the new Star Wars table that just came out has the more basic layout, people can kind of get eased in and then graduate up to other games.
I agree, and I want to reserve my final judgment for when I actually get to play one, because sometimes, though, the very simple ones are really kind of the more difficult. I mean, look at the Beatles.
Yeah.
The one that came out. It's very simple from the surface. It looks like an old school table. That thing is hard.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that there are this is my hope, and what I think is going to happen with it, or what's going on, is that it's going to be friendly for someone to just pick up and be able to play and get a couple of the modes and cool, kind of like a Galactic Tank Force.
Yeah,
that's on my mind because I played it earlier today. But there's going to be enough going on for the more advanced players.
Yeah.
Especially if you're getting into the premiums, that's got a lot more bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And then I think there's going to be Rob, who has, oh, it's Pokemon Pinball. We'll make room.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to him about it yet. I just showed him the teaser, and that was it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I also see this in video games, especially like, you know, you and I grew up on, you know, with game, maybe a joystick and one button, and then a gamepad with two buttons. And now we've got, you know, 10 buttons, and we just instinctively know what to do. And we can walk and turn at the same time. We can use both thumbsticks and stuff because we were gradually brought up that way. But, you know, somebody else our age who maybe didn't grow up with any of that have a real hard time doing the exact same things because they jumped in at the point where they're using 12 buttons and 2 sticks and stuff, and they can't look and walk at the same time. And so, I mean, I see it sometimes in video games, and video games today just assume you know how to do that. And so, but I've seen a little bit in pinball as well. So having some of these more entry-level tables that are made today, I think would be great to grow the game so pinball does not die out with Gen X.
I honestly think it would be fun if they did a junior version of this one, if it proves lucrative. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, how like the old Super Mario World pinball table was, and a few of those others. I think it would be fun to have junior pinball, especially, you know, put those around in the ticket spitter areas so that there's things to do while they wait. Mm-hmm. That would Why don't we have those anymore? And I can stand up and play them because I'm a hobbit.
Yeah. My knees would hate me, but yes. So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio 2DX tonight?
Oh, just this and that. Something about Transformers, the movie.
Ooh.
Yeah, basically it's the Great Apology Tour.
Okay.
Some TMNT stuff, some Capcom, something about David Bornias.
Okay. All right. Orange Lounge Radio 2DX is up next. Thanks so much, Jamie.
You're welcome.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. Or you can find me on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com or Instagram at BobbyBlackWolf. I will probably be posting things about the Virtual Boy that I'm going to get. And Loki is going to be right there in the comments being like, why? You are why this industry sucks. And he'll probably even use nastier words than that just because, you know, he can. And then maybe if I get the Commodore 64 or maybe board games that I'm playing, but it'll all be out there. And then I will be back here Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific to talk all about it and maybe talk about some happy stuff. So come join us then. You can also join us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord is where we are throughout the week. And you can even bring up things that maybe I missed during the week. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this work without the people who go above and beyond. And I know last week was a lot of people's re-upping their subs and everything because that is We've got affiliate like early in the month. So that's that like second week is usually when everybody's like resubbing and everything. So thank you so much to everybody who resubbed last week. But tonight, Sean322 resubbed saying woo 39 because it was their 39th month. So thank you so much for that, Sean322. I very much appreciate you and everybody for being here. You being here and you listening or you watching is really the only thing that I really ask for. But it does help pay the bills for the company that I have to fill out taxes for. I'm going to hit the button so we stop thinking about that. Thank you so much for being here. Go enjoy something this week. Try to find some joy in something this week, even if it's all in red in a Virtual Boy plastic encasement like I will be. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.